And now we'll begin with, it is KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California, exactly 8 o'clock. And this is Mae Brussel, program number 609, August the 8th, 1982, in Pacific Grove, California. And we begin World Watchers with just a quick resume of what I was talking about last year. Broadcast 557, August the 9th, 1982. A book had come out by Steve Shagan, The Circle, and in that book he has mention of the permanent, faceless, non-elected government in Washington, D.C. These are the Henry Kissingers and so forth, and who run from one country to the other and through their manipulations of elected officials and their partnerships with the underworld, the mafia, the big business, and their secret buildup of military armaments and nuclear weapons, they are leading us to the edge of extermination. That is a novel. I don't usually talk about novels on this program, but this is a novel. And he wrote the formula, and Steve Shagan seems to be familiar with the way the power structure moves. I also got from the Defense Intelligence Service a resume of Fritz Gustav Anton Kramer when he was in the United States Army. And towards the end of the war, as it was winding down, from September the 20th, 1944, to 18th of April, 1945. Remember, the war was over. He was in Scotland. He was in England. He was in France. He was in Belgium. He was in Holland. And he was in Germany. His overt area was the 84th Division as a battle clerk. And then he continued overseas serving April 19th, 1945, to October the 20th, 1947 with the European Theater Intelligence School. The other subject, one that was of interest a year ago, was Roy Cohn. I described the future terror coup with Representative Larry McDonald, that he joined the board of the anti-communist group Western Goals that was founded 3 years ago. That was 3 years ago from 1982. Representative Larry McDonald heads it, and they track and report incidences of subversion, along with Dr. Edward Teller, the John Birch Society, from Alexandria, Virginia, Munich, Bavaria, and European oligarchy, and work with the Knights of Malta. Now, it turns out that 1 year later, we learned that Western Goals, through the computer office and John Rees and Mr. J. Paul in Los Angeles, works directly into the computer of the police departments of 50 states and into a computer in Los Angeles that was going to the garage or home of Mary Love, who had a $100,000 computer, to feed information of people who have not committed crimes to 50 police departments around the country. I also talked about Admiral Bobby Inman of Task Force 157, leaving his post as deputy director of the CIA to be a part-time consultant to the House Select Committee on Intelligence. I call that the fox in the chicken house. And 1 year later, Mr. Inman was put in charge of the 7 to 10 major computer companies in Texas, where he has probably one of the largest master files of computer information. And he works with the people from Western Goals and Roy Cohn and the whole CIA mafia group. So 1 year later, he's rewarded with his massive computer program in Texas. And I also cited 5 important articles on Banco Ambrosiano and the scandals in the Banco Ambrosiano and the murder of Roberta Calvi that June, and we're up to August now, where they're still looking for the money. They are suing the Vatican. Marcinkus is still in the Vatican. Nothing is clear. They have exhumed Mr. Calvi, and it's not any longer a suicide. The money question appears everywhere and is still pertinent to what is going on at the present time, 1 year later. Now, just to update Mr. Dietrich and Fritz Kramer, this is Adolf Hitler's Kramer. I haven't talked about them for a few weeks. I just want to read you one little page that's interesting about war after the Nazis and how they got together. Mr. Sepp Dietrich was Hitler's most trusted gentleman, along with his general, Fritz Kramer, and along with Otto Skorzeny, who for 2 years was using Germans to speak English and putting them into American uniforms to confuse the Americans and melt with the Americans. And after the war, there was never any mention of where Otto Skorzeny got the uniforms and where these people changed their clothes or how they met. But in the book Spandau, written by Mr. Speer, Albert Speer, you can get a pocketbook edition, 1976, it came out. He tells about how when he was a war criminal, he's just beginning his time in jail, and Albert Speer was with the major Nuremberg trial prisoners, and Sepp Dietrich and Fritz Kramer and Otto Skorzeny were with the Dachau trial people. They were supposed to be at separate prison and have a trial for their killing Americans and Belgians at the Malmedy trial. And in the book, Secret Diaries, he tells how he takes a bath in his cell. This is Albert Speer. He says, Mr. Hess, who's still in the Spandau prison, Rudolf Hess and I shower together, and the guard supervises. And one of the German prisoners of war feeds wood into the stove, and they make a fire right there, and they take their shower right in the cell. The shower was set up in our cell block to keep us isolated from the defendants and witnesses in the forthcoming little trial. The Nuremberg was the big trial, and he puts a quote for the little trial, and I'll do a little more updating you next week and the week after on the little trial, which was Piper, Dietrich, Kramer, and Skorzeny. He said, these men are being held in the other wing of the prison. A few weeks ago, American soldier, often careless about regulations because we're supposed to be apart, let our group and theirs overlap in the prison bath. And one day I found lying beside me, splashing in the warm bath water with as much pleasure as myself, Sepp Dietrich, Hitler's constant companion in the early days. Just I say with David Emery, we call this splash, splash. He opens his eyes, and against the orders, the men from the Malmedy Dachau trial are showering and sitting in a little tub with the Nuremberg defendants. He says, Sepp Dietrich was a rather coarse-grained man with a peasant-sound common sense. He was chief of Hitler's bodyguard after 1933. That's the SS, and pretty tough. He was a corporal in the First War, made an amazing career in the Second War, and at the end of 1944, he was commander of the 6th SS Tank Army, bearing the title of the SS Obergruppenführer. I can spell it if you want, OBERSTGRUPPEN, then FUHRER for Hitler, which corresponds to full general. Hitler would refer to him as my Blucher, Blucher. That was a very kindly note, because Blucher was a hero of his during the Napoleonic Wars, and he referred to him as this great pal. I had met Sepp Dietrich, this is Albert Speer, for the last time during the Ardennes Offensive, that's the Battle of the Bulge. He seemed then remarkably indifferent to what was going on. Now, this version is totally 180 degrees different than other people's story. He had left the leadership of his SS divisions to his staff, which was a lie, but he was living in retirement during this battle in a remote forest cottage. He had become a grumpy eccentric. Now, he was tried for the crimes of this battle, and they were supposed to get the death sentence, but Senator Joe McCarthy and Nazis from Germany, who put him into the Senate, made sure they all got out and walked out together. But the point is that he is exposing, Albert Speer, that while the Battle of the Ardennes Offensive is going on, he's in a remote cottage. Sepp Dietrich was not in retirement. But again, this could be the safe house, because Dietrich and Skorzeny and Fritz Kramer were all together. And if Hitler's Fritz Kramer, the general, was in that little cottage at any time and by a fluke was picked up along with these people, and they had to temporarily stand trial, and that's another story in itself, how they knew they were going to get out. And I'll give you those quotations maybe next week. Dietrich and Piper knew that the trial was just a joke. They had a cottage in the forest where this Albert Speer, in fact, was with Sepp Dietrich, and therefore there could be our friends Otto Skorzeny and Mr. Piper and Fritz Kramer, because that could be where they changed to American uniforms and could go back and forth. And that's the time period that I mentioned last year where Mr. Fritz Kramer was traveling to various countries, Belgium and Holland and Germany and Scotland, after he delivers Heinz Kinzinger to the Battle of the Ardennes and offensive, and then delivers them to Klaus Barbie and the top generals. Kramer's doing a little bit of traveling. Now, last week I was talking about the information I had on Klaus Barbie and John DeLorean, so I decided I would go right to the background of DeLorean tonight and bring up a few things about Don DeLorean, which we have not yet had on the air. I've had two broadcasts on DeLorean, and if you want those back broadcasts, you can get them on the locations of where he was when he was at General Motors, with his family, with the way he built his plant in Ireland, and I covered quite a bit of material on John DeLorean and some of his contacts, but there's been a massive amount of information since then, and I haven't updated it. But I'll start this section of the program with four major stories that involved John DeLorean or his companies that were in the news this week. The first story came one day after the broadcast here on Kazoo. It was in the Monterey Herald and its Associated Press story, John DeLorean Investigation to Pick Up. With time running out for the prosecution, the federal authorities are moving to form a task force to investigate the finances of John DeLorean and the $17 million his creditors claim is unaccounted for. Well, I called the U.S. attorney in Detroit, and the FBI called me back, and I photocopied for them the information on DeLorean with the phone numbers of the persons who told me about the arrest of DeLorean and William Hedrick, and that DeLorean had been with Klaus Barbie down in Bolivia. And I also called Jeff Girth of the New York Times because he is the number one writer on this subject. I haven't seen or heard anything yet, and I have to mail off. I just finished the packet for the FBI and the Justice Department, and I suggested where they might look for this $17 million. Maybe I could save them some time because this money is roving around. And that was U.S. Attorney Leonard Gilman in Detroit. And then he had another fellow call me, and as I said, the FBI called back, which they very seldom do, but which they did. And I said, you're very prompt. In the past, they've usually waited 10 years to catch on to what is happening. But I did turn them on to where this money could come from. The second important article in the paper this week along the subject was the charges against Johnny Carson's lawyer dismissed, sort of. That's the way it's written, sort of. This is the Los Angeles Herald Examiner, and I'm going at length into a complicated tale of John DeLorean, organized crime, Johnny Carson, and the Hollywood connections, the cocaine, the offshore banking, and the mob connections that surrounds this whole milieu. And you won't remember the names or the dates, but you'll get the idea or the tone of what I'm saying. And if you want the chart that goes with it, you can send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll mail it to you. This article is by Paul Wilner. It says, a federal judge yesterday dismissed racketeering charges against Henry Bushkin, B-U-S-H-K-I-N, that's the attorney for Johnny Carson, and entertainer Johnny Carson, that's his personal lawyer, and Carson himself, in connection with a lawsuit brought out by two of their former partners from a bank, the Commercial Bank of California, that is now defunct. They've been charged with racketeering, and Johnny Carson also, and his attorney Bushkin. The judge dropped the racketeering charges. However, the U.S. District Judge Laughlin Waters refused to grant a summary judgment to dismiss the suit and refused to dismiss the allegations of the federal security law violations. Johnny Carson was co or partner owner with his attorney, Bushkin, in this bank, Commercial Bank of California in Beverly Hills. And it went belly under, and it dried up just about the time the money dried up when Roberta Calvi was hung in a lot, and Mr. Jelly had fled Italy, and Mr. Sindona is in a jail in New York, and the flow of narcotic money was getting tight, and a lot of people were getting exposed. In fact, DeLorean had to get his money fast. In the suit filed in March, two men who worked with the bank on the board, a Mr. Copelson and Mr. Miller, Arnold Copelson, K-O-P-E-L-S-O-N, and Michael Miller, charged that Bushkin had violated federal statutes by engaging in a pattern of racketeering activity. And they brought a potential customer to the bank to effectuate a shark loan operation and engage in unlawful kickback activities. Now, the crime syndicate fellow that I'll talk about at length is Jack Catane, C-A-T-A-I-N, now facing federal counterfeiting charges, and he has been identified as having links to organized crime and various law enforcement agencies, including the Angelo Bruno in Philadelphia, and we'll do more on that. The court documents have alleged that Catane, C-A-T-A-N, used the bank, the commercial bank, which is now in receivership as of this summer, to deposit and transfer in violation of federal laws against money laundering. And the documents also have charged that a company owned partly by the John DeLorean Motor Company, which was controlled for a period by Mr. Catane, was used for unlawful purposes by Bushkin, a former director of DeLorean. And this all is important because DeLorean claims that he was singled out and he was a victim. Bushkin's attorney was fighting it, but that is the second important story of the week. that the investigation still goes on. They've dropped some charges against Johnny Carson and his attorney, but the others are still going. The next article, it was a two-part article, was from the Los Angeles Times, the judge to freeze the assets of Mark Rich and Company. And I might have mentioned that a few weeks ago, but then it was renewed again. Mark Rich owns 20% of 20th Century Fox, and the judge has tied up and frozen his American money that is in this country, and he has a mysterious career that goes back to oil profits that have to do with the time when Gerald Ford became president and Henry Kissinger was running around inflating the oil prices, and then Rich buys 50% of Pebble Beach and 20th Century Fox and puts Kissinger on the board after Kissinger has made Mark Rich's profits go up to the hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, along that story with Mark Rich was a bigger story. That was the Los Angeles Times, the fourth big story. Out of the shadows, the big commodity firm is suddenly propelled into public spotlight. And this has to do with Mark Rich and Company. And it says, big commodities firm is suddenly propelled into the public spotlight. Now, the reason I enjoy this on the front page of the Wall Street Journal so much is that I have been talking about 20th Century Fox Studio with Madame Chenault and Grace Kelly and William Rogers from Resorts International. And every week I do a Who's Who, Henry Kissinger, because it's very important. As a matter of fact, I talked to a researcher in Los Angeles this morning who called me on a matter and was totally unaware of the cast of characters on the board of that particular studio. Now, the Wall Street Journal has an important background on Mark Rich because as soon as he was buying the studio with Marvin Davis from Colorado, he did put Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission, of the investor in many major corporations and involved with the Kuwait oil scandal there. And, of course, I just like to follow him because the Warren Commission, the deals he made with Nixon, how he got to be president, and he's on these boards. But and as soon as Mark Rich bought 50% of Fox Studio, Kissinger, again, surfaces on the board with Gerald Ford. Now, in essence, I'll just give you the highlights of the Wall Street Journal story. It was a front-page story, August the 5th, 1983, Wall Street Journal. It says, the court fines Mark Rich for withholding papers of huge profit in oil deals. He has an annual revenue of $10 billion. He wheels and deals in secret. When he purchased 20th Century Fox, he was the mystery buyer. He's now accused by the United States government of taking a Swiss parent firm, Mark Rich Incorporated, in Switzerland. He has the same Mark Rich Incorporated in the United States and one in Switzerland. Same board, same directors. He claims they're different companies, so you don't have to know what's going on in Switzerland. The government is accusing him of siphoning $20 million in taxes that he owes the United States in 1980 out of the United States and set up a massive tax evasion scheme. Now, most of you, if you this were tax season in April, you may not appreciate that, or you may not even appreciate it in August, how one man and one corporation takes $20 million out of the United States, and the profit came from Henry Kissinger raising the oil prices in the early 70s. So you're getting it both ends. You're paying more oil. You're getting this inflation. The profit goes over to Switzerland. They buy up your movie studios. They buy up Pebble Beach, this gorgeous area around here, and God knows what else. And this article says, in April 1982, they subpoenaed papers from the Swiss document. The United States questions the Mark Rich Company in the U.S. and the Swiss Mark Rich. And they will not accept the fact that they have the same boards, the owners, but they're independent. The fines started at $50,000 a day, but the company wouldn't be hurt if he paid fines for years. I believe the fee of Howard Hughes to not go to the court trial to, there's a test case of dropping the stock on Air West and manipulating so he could buy it cheaper and then make a big lot of money. I think he paid $34 million fee not to be seen because there was no Howard Hughes. And the corporation was willing to hand over a $34 million fee. Now, the Energy Department and the Department of Price Controls want to go into the background of this gentleman who in the early 1970s, was raising the oil price. And I've mentioned this on other broadcasts, and I brought out my Jack Anderson article, June the 12th, 1978, or 1977, where he's talking about Henry Kissinger as Secretary of the State, as part of a conspiracy to raise the oil prices with the Arabs, and Senator Frank Church was investigating it and challenging the Shah of Iran and Saudi Arabia and the oil cartels, and how Henry Kissinger was behind the raising of the oil prices, and after he raises the prices, Mr. Mark Rich gets the profit, then Kissinger gets on the board of the studio. I think that should be clear to you. I also have an article, March 29, 1975, from the Monterey Herald, suggesting the role of Henry Kissinger as Secretary of State, going back to the early 70s, is part of a plan to assassinate and murder the Saudi Arabian king, and I have said how he was with him just days before he died, and they tried to blame a Berkeley student who was on LSD of killing the king, and then they had his head cut off very quickly, the Saudi Arabian justice. He came from Colorado and Berkeley, and they tried to say that the nephew did it, and off with his head. And there were articles at the time that the king of Saudi Arabia didn't want to raise the oil prices in the early 70s, but Henry Kissinger wanted it, and the Shah wanted it, because they could put the profits in Chase Manhattan Bank in New York, and then the money that the Shah got for the inflated oil prices, he could buy weapons, and they also put it in international drug traffic. So in my early files, going back to the early 70s, to support the Wall Street Journal story, it's all there, even the accusations of the murder charges and the role of Henry Kissinger, suggesting he played a role in killing the king of Saudi Arabia right after having him killed, not doing it himself. And the Wall Street Journal article talks about the prices that were raised, and it gives the background of Mark Rich, who is another multinational from Europe who came to the United States, not American-born, just identical to Henry Kissinger or Mr. Bluedorn of Gulf and Western. And it seems that there are many, many people born in Europe who come over and take over these multi-billion-dollar corporations. Mark Rich was born in Belgium. Belgium family came. Family left during World War II. He lived in New York City and worked for Philip Brothers, P-H-I-L-I-P-P Brothers. He never had a college education. Then he worked for a man, Ludwig Jesselson, J-E-S-S-E-L-S-O-N. And Philip Brothers combined with Philbro Salomon, it became. Many of you have heard that name, P-H-I-L-B-R-O-S-A-L-O-M-O-N. Pincus Green was his partner, and is his partner now, Mark Rich, worked for Philbro Salomon, and went by Mr. Jesselson to Bolivia, interesting, with Klaus Barbie down there, and to Madrid, where Otto Skorzeny was, and where John McCloy had sent Klaus Barbie, along with Henry Kissinger, and Kissinger, the drug emperor, is in power today. Jesselson sent them to Bolivia and Madrid, and in the 1970s, they broke off. They were working for Jesselson with the oil decisions and wanted an increase of salary, and he didn't want to give it to them. So they went into business on their own. But during the Arab oil embargo, they made a fortune, tremendous profits, thanks to Henry Kissinger, who made the policies of war and peace and the raising of oil prices for Chase Manhattan and Nelson Rockefeller. In the 1970s, after this killing of money and after being in Bolivia and Madrid, and also supplying weapons to Ecuador. They weren't just into commodities. They formed their own company and went away from the people who started them, Philbro Salomon, just as Litton Industries started with Howard Hughes' organization, and they splintered off and then became their own organization with the same goals and the same minds. They put spies into the offices of their former employers, according to Wall Street Journal, in Tokyo and in Argentina. Now, 1974, they started with $2 million. This is the American dream. And then the company got a fast start. $2 million is seed money. By 1976, 2 years later, they're worth $50 million. The headquarters of the Netherlands Antilles, you can imagine how you parlay. I don't know how you do tin and rice and aluminum and ores and sulfur and sugar and grains. Even at that price, I would think it would have to be involved with narcotics and Bolivia and Klaus Barbie, who in the early 70s, with Richard Nixon as president and E. Howard Hunt in office and Frank Sturgis from the gaming tables down in Cuba and Operation Intercept, we escalate the drug importation in this country with the Shah of Iran from that area, from the Southeast Asian War, and the Nguyen Bank gets formed. So they parlayed $2 million in from 1974 to 76 to 50 million, and now it exceeds several hundred million or into the billions. Their base is in a place called Zub, Switzerland, Z-U-B. They have offices in 30 countries. They sell commodities. They tied up the oil in Nigeria, which is interesting. And then when Richfield wanted to buy oil, they have to go through Mark Rich and Company. The same way with Angola. They tied up the oil in Angola. And when Exxon wants it, they go through Mark Rich and Company, and they supply weapons, as I say, to Ecuador. Now, they tied up the Malaysian mines, the tin in Malaysia, and had monopoly of that. They formed their own company when the United States government wanted to know if they took $20 million worth of tax money and where it is, because I mentioned before that Mark Rich has 50% of 20th Century Fox, and Chris Kraft owns, he owns 50%, and Chris Kraft owns 20%, and John DeLorean's on the board of Chris Kraft. And he's parlaying his fortune way beyond anything he could imagine from the time that he's left General Motors. So the $20 million is missing for Mark Rich, and he's paying his fines, and he starts a company called Clarendon Limited, C-L-A-R-E-N-D-O-N, Limited, in this summer in 1983, to get the United States courts off his back. He can't tell where his money is. The Vatican can't tell where their several hundred million is. John DeLorean can't tell where his millions are, and they all have common denominators, so that this Wall Street Journal article was very timely today. Now, incidentally, the head of 20th Century Fox before Marvin Davis got it, is Dennis Stanfill, was a person who was forced out by Marvin Davis, and he was a graduate of Annapolis with Jimmy Carter, and he started his own company, and it has the same name of Clarendon. He says it's a coincidence. Can you imagine working for 20th Century Fox, having the having this organization taken over by Marvin Davis, and you have the same name, and you don't even know that each has the same name, the Clarendon Incorporated or the Clarendon Limited. So this is a guy from Belgium who came to the United States, who had no college education, who invests in the world commodities, who raises our oil prices, who affects our lives in a tremendous way. And he, as I say, is like Gulf and West, with the links to the CIA, the intelligence, the mob, the secret funds. And they are trying to tie up all of his money in the United States. And this can go on for years because he still goes on trading. Now, I mentioned last week the matter of the suggestion that Klaus Barbie had supplied the cocaine for John DeLorean, which is being checked out by the powers that be. And so I went back to my files to remind you of a broadcast I did May the 9th this year, just a few months ago, that W.R. Grace and Company acquired a DeLorean subsidiary. That was on the broadcast, number 596, W.R. Grace. David Emery found that in the newspapers. Grace acquired Composite Technology Corporation, a plastic subsidiary of DeLorean Motors based in Troy, Michigan. Well, W.R. Grace is the high official for the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, for the Knights of Malta. He was the man who instigated the knighthood of Mr. McMahon, Johnny Carson's co-partner with Alexander Haig, just this January. They were knighted into the secret society of the Vatican. W.R. Grace is closely linked to IG Farben and all the Nazi organizations. So by buying a piece of the DeLorean operation, he can travel around to various countries to pick up the missing pieces or the pieces that should not be exposed, because he officially now, in quotes, has a piece of the DeLorean investment. I also spoke to Kevin Coogan in New York, who first broke open the story of the Sovereign Military Order Malta, and he said J. Peter Grace and a Pan-American official set up an airline in Bolivia called Coche Bombay, B-O-M-B-E, in Bolivia, Coche Bombay in Bolivia, and the head of it was attached to the SS Gestapo. He was a Nazi that worked as the head of it. And then when it was reported that a Gestapo chief was running the airline, he left the airline because of his Nazi past and stopped working for Pan Am Airlines and then became the governor of Coche Bamba in Bolivia. So there are very high top Nazis still in Bolivia, and that's the story of Coche Bamba. And there's J. Peter Grace down in Bolivia, and also in the United States and part of the DeLorean empire. Now we'll take a one-minute break and do some more on Johnny Carson, John DeLorean, and the Mafia, as much as I have time in that complicated web, and see if I can make it a little simple for you so you understand the relationship of Hollywood, drugs, secret offshore bankings, and some of the people who are in the news today.